This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Zimbabwe has declared a state of emergency in Harare following 20 deaths and more than 2,000 cases related to waterborne diseases such as Salmonella, typhoid, and cholera.
That's Columbus Mafhunga reporting from Harare. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, police in Nigeria say at least 35 people were killed and more than 100 injured when a gas tanker exploded and set a petrol station on fire. Close to 50,000 people have fled their homes in north and central Mali so far this year, a 60% increase from this time last year. And the health ministry of the DRC says the country's latest Ebola outbreak is under control in the epicenter of the country's northeast. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. South Sudan's warring parties are expected to sign a final revitalized peace deal tomorrow if all of the last sticking points have been worked out. A general agreement left unresolved issues. Negotiators have been trying to work out compromises so the deal can be signed in Addis Ababa as planned. The issues have included some of the stumbling blocks that have made a lasting deal elusive with so many factions involved. They include how many states the country will have and what constitutes a quorum on decision making. Police in Nigeria say at least 35 people were killed and more than 100 injured when a gas tanker exploded and set a petrol station on fire. They say some of the victims had rushed to the scene and were enveloped in flames. The accident occurred yesterday along the Lafaya McCurdy Road in Nasarawa State. A taxi driver told the Associated Press that survivors had to be taken to hospitals on motorbikes because no ambulances were available. Many gas dealers operate unregulated mini depots in Nigeria's cities, leading to frequent explosions. The health ministry in the DRC says the country's latest Ebola outbreak is under control in the epicenter in the country's northeast. But smaller clusters of cases are causing concern, including up to four in the nearby trading center of Putembo, a city about a million people near the border with Uganda. Peter Salama, the World Health Organization's Deputy Director General in charge of emergencies, spoke with my colleague Paul Alexander about the status of the country's 10th outbreak and the challenges of keeping it from crossing borders.
Yeah, the current situation is that we now have 131 confirmed and probable cases and 90 deaths. The last 3 weeks have certainly seen a reduction in number of cases, although there was a mild increase in recent days. And what we've seen is that around 15 of the last 24 confirmed cases have come from one particular index case. So they're all related to an area near Beni called Ndindi. And that area has seen, for several particular reasons, the majority of recent cases. And then the other major development has been, of course, the confirmation of cases in the city of Butembo, where we are very concerned because it's a city of somewhere around 1 million people, and we've had now one confirmed cases and two probable cases in that city, and there is one additional suspicious case. So that city is certainly something we're following very closely and rapidly now scaling up our response measures. Apart from that, when we go back and look at the trends and the original epicenters of the outbreak around Mangina and Beni, we're seeing that cases are indeed declining in those areas. The response is making steady progress, but there are, as we know with Ebola outbreaks, there is almost always a sting in the tail, as we say, and we're certainly seeing that sting, which is complicating the recent couple of weeks.
So that would sort of reflect the DRC's health ministry saying that the outbreak is under control, because it appears to be in Beni and elsewhere, although there must be some concerns about Butembo and the other town.
So I certainly share the sentiment that we're making strong progress, particularly around the original epicenters of Beni and Mangina. But as I said, there's still reason to be quite concerned about the ongoing cluster in Ndindi, and particularly about the new recently confirmed cases in and around Butembo, because they're quite new, and we're still doing full contact tracing on those cases in Butembo, and we haven't yet vaccinated even the full list of contacts that we have there in Butembo. So it's still early days to say that Butembo, at least, is under control.
What are the challenges of preventing Ebola from jumping borders to nearby Uganda, Rwanda, and Sudan?
So there's enormous challenges. As you know, this part of northern Kivu has a lot of movement of population, both forced displacements. Around 1 million people of the 8 million population of North Kivu are internally displaced persons, but also travel, voluntary travel, particularly for commercial and trade reasons. So we know that some of the cross-border sites, such as Kasindi, see up to 10 to 20,000 people crossing in either direction every day. So it's an enormous, as you can imagine, exercise to screen that level of population movement across the border, particularly with Uganda, but also to some extent with Rwanda particularly. So it is certainly a real challenge, and we're now seeing alert cases on a regular basis from Uganda, including a couple over the weekend that kept us quite busy. Fortunately, though, we've had no confirmed cases in surrounding countries. And what the alerts tell us is that really the surveillance system is actually active and working. And if there were to be a case, it would appear that we would pick it up very quickly.
Is that with temperature monitoring, or how else do you determine whether someone is crossing might be infected?
So at the borders, they do a range of things, from qualitative questionnaires, so just a range of questions that they ask them about any symptoms that might indicate that they are sick due to viral hemorrhagic fever. They do indeed do temperature monitoring as well. Across the border in Uganda and Rwanda, they're also, of course, combining that with really strengthened active surveillance for any cases as part of their infectious disease surveillance system.
That was WHO official Peter Salama speaking with my colleague Paul Alexander. Zimbabwe has declared a state of emergency in Harare following 20 deaths and more than 2,000 cases related to waterborne diseases such as salmonella, typhoid, and cholera. Columbus Mafunga reports for VOA from the capital.
Zimbabwe's new health minister, Obadiah Moyo, on Tuesday told reporters that poor water supply, blocked sewers, and a failure to collect waste were making a cholera outbreak in the capital worse.
The numbers are growing by the day. To date, there are about 2,000, over 2,000 cases. There's been a total of 20 deaths. We are putting in solutions to the problem. We've requested our partners from the United Nations to give us assistance. We are declaring an emergency for Harare. This will enable us to be able to contain cholera, typhoid, and whatever else, you know, is going on, to be able to ensure that we get rid of the problem as quickly as possible.
Moyo made the comments during a visit to a temporary cholera treatment camp in Harare. He said some schools in the affected areas had been temporarily closed after two students died. Mahomad Agi Ayoya is the United Nations Children's Fund representative for Zimbabwe.
We have already mobilized quite significant resources from the UN in general, UNICEF and WHO in particular. We are also talking with our different partners on the ground, DFID and others, to make sure that we mobilize more resources. We have alerted our regional offices and headquarters because we know this is a very serious issue which we need going forward, quite huge investments to contain the outbreak. So we are working very hard to support the government of Zimbabwe.
In Budiriro, one of the most affected areas, people say they have yet to receive clean water, raw sewage flows in the streets, and 66-year-old Jay Kandururu says he's angry. He says they've been telling authorities to repair the old sewer pipes, but they refuse. We are tired, he says. They don't come to fix their sewer pipes. They let the sewage flow, says Kandururu. We now have to go to bars to relieve ourselves, he says. It has been like this for 3 months. A 2008 cholera outbreak in Zimbabwe lasted over a year and killed about 5,000 people. It was stopped only after international groups like United Nations agencies and USAID donated drugs and water treatment chemicals. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Close to 50,000 people have fled their homes in northern and central Mali so far this year, a 60% increase from this time last year. The humanitarian agency Norwegian Refugee Council, NRC, says the spike of newly displaced people is due to intercommunal clashes, a rise in armed groups, and military operations. So far, the United Nations aid appeal for Mali is only 32% funded, while the number of people displaced continues to rise. The NRC has exhausted its funding for emergency response and will no longer be able to meet the new needs of those affected in Mali starting this month. Damatili Gali is the head of programs in Mali for NRC. She spoke with me from Bamako about the dire situation of the displaced people.
The regions affected by the conflict are increasing, so we are more and more invested in central Mali, for instance. For the last 10 years, the conflict was only for located in north of the country. So we have now increased area to cover. In the meantime, access, both in terms of logistics or security, is more and more complex. And so that means that we need more and more means to being able to respond to the main needs of the population affected by the conflict or the crisis or the climatic catastrophe. Currently in the country, The needs that have been identified are only covered or funded at 32%. So it's very, very low.
Also, this is a 60% increase compared to the same period last year. So what are the needs that the people have for this year?
The 60% increase is about the new IDPs, so internal displaced persons. That means that because of the increase of the conflict at both local sides, communitarian, linked to the land, linked to the military operations, into the presence of armed groups. So for various reasons, the number of persons obliged to flee their homes has increased of 60% this year compared to last year. And their main needs are very basic ones. So food, essential items for their house or their shelters, being able to receive medical assistance, so how they will be able to carry on to live with dignity and being able to meet their very basic needs. In the meantime, we are also trying to support them in the medium term, to make sure that they will be more sufficiently resilient to absorb another shock. But right now, we are really worried about our emergency response capacity. Currently, like NRC, which is one of the main actors in terms of emergency, we don't have any capacity to reply to any new statement. But we are still doing the humanitarian watch of the context, and we are still receiving a lot of alerts. We are still doing some assessments, but we are currently facing a huge gap in terms of funding.
What is the government's reaction to this displacement?
The government is very supportive at local level, so we are working with them at local, so commune or circle or region level. We are working with them closely, and they are part of the coordination mechanism. We are not dealing with them or supporting them at the national level. It's not our mandate. But at the local level, yes, we are working with them very closely. And especially last week, we were intervening in Djene, so a new area affected by the conflict. And the local authorities and local leaders are very concerned with the new wave of new IDPs coming to their village. They are already facing a difficult situation with a lot of food insecurity, for instance. And now, in addition to this, they have to deal with hundreds of new families that are fleeing the conflict zone and are coming to their area looking for some peace and security. But the local authorities at very village level are very much concerned and involved.
Damitili Gali is head of programs in Mali for NRC. She spoke with me from Bamako. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 21 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Police in Nigeria say at least 35 people were killed and more than 100 injured when a gas tanker exploded and set a petrol station on fire. The Health Ministry of the DRC says the country's latest Ebola outbreak is under control, and close to 50,000 people have fled their homes in North and Central Mali so far this year. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. In the latest step of their stunning reconciliation, Ethiopia and Eritrea opened two border crossings today that carry both symbolic and economic clout. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki were on hand for the opening of Zalambessa. Broadcast live on Ethiopian state television, it showed soldiers and civilians dancing together. It was the first time in 20 years that the two former rivals had functional crossings, and the speed in which it took place was clear. A red carpet covered potholes in the road, while with piles of emptied sandbags lying on the ground. The crossings at Zalambessa and Bure are critical for landlocked Ethiopia because they lead to the Eritrean ports of Massawa and Assab on the Red Sea. The booming country has been limited to using Djibouti's port, and Eritrea should benefit from the influx of goods and trade. The reconciliation has been fostered by the massive reforms Abiy has implemented since taking office this year. Over now to South Africa, where police say the country's murder rate, which already was one of the world's highest, jumped nearly 7% last year. An average of 57 people were killed per day in 2017, for a total of 20,336, up from 19,016 a year earlier. The figure has now risen for six straight years. Police Minister Beke Sele told reporters the country has become close to a war zone and that everyone has to take responsibility to improve the situation. He says South Africans must not take it as a norm that they can be hijacked, robbed, and killed every day. Police are seeking at least 62,000 more officers to help fight rising gang violence and other crimes. Rwanda's last census of mountain gorillas, done in 2016, put the population in the Virunga Massif in the community at 604. Their numbers had fallen as low as 242 in 1981. As part of its efforts to protect the rare species since 2005, Rwanda has held annual events to name baby apes. Tourists say the celebrations foster a relationship between the animals and humans that helps lead to sustainable conservation. This year's ceremony was held under the theme Conservation is Life. Eugene Uimana reports for VOA from Kigali.
Actually, I have chosen a Chinese name. The name is Wang.
There is China's ambassador to Rwanda, Rao Hongwei, but he's naming a human newborn. He's naming a baby mountain gorilla, one of 23 born in the past year, named last week in Rwanda. The Rwandan government regularly invites foreign dignitaries and tourists to gather for annual gorilla baby naming ceremonies. They more than take on the traditional gatherings human families hold to welcome newborns. This year, Olusegun Obasanjo, the former president for Nigeria, named one baby gorilla, Aremu, a name he borrows from his own names.
And if all countries will go this way, setting out a day in the year, celebrate a particular animal or plant, I think we will have a world where there will be no problem of climate change.
New Zealander Nicholas Groenewegen and Canadian Alexa Gray took part in the ceremony.
So by allowing people to name gorillas, it allows people to have that personal touch.
And we visited gorillas. I've been lucky enough to track with them 3 times now, and it doesn't matter how many times you go, it's incredible every time you get to see them. It's very magical. There's nothing else like it.
Many Rwandans living near the Volcanoes National Park say the gorillas living there are an important resource.
The gorillas are helping us to improve our life, because when tourists come in Rwanda, they buy our products and our life comes better.
How would be your market if there were not gorillas?
It wouldn't be easy for us.
The Chief Executive Officer of Rwanda Development Board, Claire Kamanzi, says those visitors are important to the economy.
In particular, tourism was chosen as one of the sectors that had the potential to drive Rwanda's economic transformation. We aim to double tourism to $800 million and to ensure that tourism in Rwanda is very much underpinned by a very strong focus of conservation.
The Development Board says tourism last year brought in $438 million and gorillas contribute about 90% of tourism revenues in the national parks. By 2024, Rwanda aims to expand the Volcanoes National Park by almost 20%, which could help the gorilla population grow 15 to 20%. The park dates back to 1925, when a small area between Kalisimbi, Bisoke and Mikendo Mountains was set aside to protect the gorillas. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Lenore Moudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will take a look at the ongoing Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Our guest is Dr. Malonga Myatudila, senior public health specialist and one of the doctors who first discovered the Ebola virus in the DRC in 1976. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The US country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a discussion with Ugandan pop star Bobby Wine on his arrest, detention and release, and why he came to the U.S. to seek medical attention. Ugandan politics in the spotlight on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.